And now, live from Jerusalem, you're listening to Israel Inspired Radio. Here are your hosts, Rabbis Ari Abramowitz and Jeremy Gimpel.
Shalom, and you are listening to Israel Inspired on the Land of Israel Network, thelandofisrael.com. Ari Abramowitz here with Jeremy Gimpel. And Jeremy, we're doing this thing.
We're making it happen.
We're making it happen. The Land of Israel Network is going to again have
Ari and podcast. Ari and Jeremy.
Yeah, you want to call it Ari and Jeremy.
I don't want to call it Ari and Jeremy.
Israel Inspired.
No, I want to call it the Ari Abramowitz Show.
The Ari Abramowitz Show. Okay.
That's what I want to call it.
We could call it that. I think we should keep calling it Israel Inspired. You want to call it Ari and Jeremy, whatever. Let's not get lost in the titles, because that's exactly what I see happening in Israel. There is so much happening in the world and in Israel in specific about these titles. People are willing to grab over each other, to crawl over each other, to step on each other, to lie, just to achieve this title, right? This title of prime minister. We see it happening with Naftali Bennett. Right. He's literally, I mean, it's hard for me to see. It's hard for me to behold what I see happening in so many people in the country. Everywhere I'm going, that's the first thing I say. Mato choshav al Bennett. Right. Even the guy that just came to change my water filter. He's like, ani lo ma'amin, he's a boged. You know, what a betrayer. How perfidious. You know, like, people are so upset. And what's he doing? What's he doing? Why is he doing this? Bottom line is, for a title. And that's the thing. When you look at throughout Jewish history, like back in the Tanakh, what is a real leader? A real leader is not someone that is like, I want to lead. I want to lead. I want the title. I want the title. There's someone that they understand that being a leader is being a servant. And it's not necessarily something that they feel worthy of doing, that they feel capable of doing. And the real leaders have the nation come after them and saying, please lead us. Please lead us. And even if you don't have the title, if you're a real leader, just by the power and the charisma of your words, you are able to shift minds and hearts and lead even without the title. But here they're just scrounging for the titles. And it's hard for me with this whole Naftali Bennett thing. And the truth is, I know we have listeners from throughout Israel, from around the world. Some are Jewish, some are Christian, some are Buddhist, some are Muslim. But people really want to understand what's happening inside on the Kishkis with this whole political situation. A lot of times, like, outsiders aren't into the inside politics, but people want to understand the inside politics of what's happening. And the truth is, my head is spinning. I don't fully get it. I see a lot of parallels between this week's Torah portion we're entering into and what's happening in the country right now.
It's weird that we're living through Parashat Korach as all of this is happening.
Yes.
Because it's like a rebellion from within the nation against the leader, obviously a very unrighteous rebellion. It's amazing how the Parsha constantly interacts and communicates to the Jewish people in our time through the ancient words. It's just an amazing reality.
It's amazing.
Could there be a better, more relevant Torah portion for what's happening in Israel right now?
Yeah, and it's not only a commentary on it, it's deep insights into it that illuminate what's really happening. Because we see the entire Korach rebellion from start to finish, who was vindicated and what happened, and really, like, what the motivations were. You know, you're talking also about, like, what's happening in the country. There's just something that happened yesterday. It's hard not to see the correlation there. And it was done in a very merciful way in from above. But what was the bottom line of what happened is that Shaarei Tzedek Hospital, right, in their parking lot, a big portion of the parking lot, the ground opened up and swallowed up all of these vehicles. It was a crazy thing to behold. The ground opened up and just swallowed them in right in the same Torah portion as Parshat Korach.
And the name of the hospital is the Gates of Righteousness.
The Gates of Righteousness. And to me, that was just another message from above. Like, what's happening now in the country is a parallel of what's happening. And really, it's not only what's happening in Israel, but around the world, because there are scary and sad parallels between what's happening in American politics and what's happening here in Israel. And really, it's just a coalition of malcontents. That's what it is. Because when Korach went to Moshe and he said, everybody's holy, why do you rise yourself above everyone? Moshe didn't even address the arguments. And he had a lot to say. There were even some things that Korach said that I think Moshe would have agreed with if he was coming from a place of truth and a desire to arrive at a truth and a greater peace. But Moshe understood that this wasn't about his issues. Why is he rising himself above? This is the issue that Korach wanted. He wanted power. Exactly what he was accusing Moshe Rabbeinu. He wanted power, and he just brought together this entire coalition of malcontents. The tribe of Reuven, right, who was the firstborn, and they didn't get really the firstborn status. So there are the Reuvenites in there and Levites that felt like they should have had the power and they should be even more elite. And it wasn't about what they were saying it's about. It was about a hatred and a desire to depose the leader. We saw this happen in America with Donald Trump. There was such an overwhelming hatred of him, that anybody would have won that election. And they really scraped the bottom of the barrel as far as leadership is concerned. And people voted for them just because he wasn't Donald Trump. And that's what I see happening here also. What is bringing together this huge, crazy, wide array of the Israeli political spectrum, from the far left to the Arabs to what was at one point considered the right wing, and it's totally obviously not right wing right now? It's the desire to depose Benjamin Netanyahu. That's what's bringing everybody together. And so it's just, you see these parallels coming right before our eyes, and it's you can't, once you see it, you can't unsee it.
Yeah. It's just, it's like in a pride of lions, the younger, weaker lions have all gathered together to take down the alpha lion, like the king of the lions. But at what price? I mean, the price that the politicians are paying is just selling our country down the drain right now. And it's hard for me, because here we want to promote Israel and we want people to support Israel and we want people around the world to make Aliyah. And then we're like, ooh, it's not really going so well here in Israel right now. It's hard to support Israel when you see like just such rotten behavior amongst our leaders.
Right. And not only that, I don't know if you saw this letter that was written by Mike Evans.
Everyone saw the letter.
Everybody saw this letter. And that was, the guy was unhinged. You got to get, the truth is, I have a little bit of a heart, a little compassion for him, because clearly he was having some sort of break, like mental, emotional break, that he just spewed forth. I'm going to do everything I can to destroy you. Like the curse words, the vulgarities, you're pooping on the face of the evangelical Christians, and I this and I that. But on the one hand, I sort of enjoyed the article, because at least he was saying what was really on his mind. You know, I feel like everything is just spin, spin, spin. Bennett, I saw this interview with him, and they asked him why he's doing this, and he said, I mean, I could literally visualize his team of Birnbaum and these other, like, big, high-class, expensive political
strategists. PR
and
people.
What are they telling him? They're like, this is what you say. It was in my heart, my real commitment wasn't, as I said, not to sit with Yair Lapid, but it was to save Israel from chaos. And he keeps repeating that, save Israel from chaos. As if, like, I don't know what chaos he's talking about. We're going to a bunch of elections, and that was annoying and weird and whatever, but chaos, I'd prefer that chaos to what he's building, which is just, so explain to our listeners, Jeremy, what is so bad about this?
What's so bad about this? Well, in the coalition agreements, for the first time since the state of Israel has founded, you know, there's sort of directional statements about what the heart and soul of the Israeli government is here to do. And until now, they've always said, we are here to keep the identity of the state of Israel as a Jewish and democratic state. And for the first time in Israel's history, they removed the word Jewish from that sentence. So for the first time, the secularists are trying to take out the spirit of Judea and the spirit of the Jewish people and the religion of the Jewish people, to take out the Torah, to take out why, like, the soul of Israel, and just to make it into some other secular democracy, as if we're here to be another type of Canada that happens to be in the Middle East. That didn't happen under Ehud Barak's government or under Ehud Olmert's government, other left-wing governments, but now in this government, it's really made a sharp left turn. And the head of the Meretz party just proposed a bill. And, you know, there's priorities. There's a lot of things that are going on in Israel, and she's decided that the top of her priority, the most important thing to do right now, was to propose a bill that if a Jew reaches out to another Jew that's under the age of 18 years old in an attempt to bring them closer to Judaism, they should be spend 6 months in prison.
Right. Let me just take a step back and elaborate on that. As people around the world know, Judaism, we are not a missionary religion. As a matter of fact, we're the alternate, we're the reverse. You want to convert to Judaism, you're turned away three times, you have to do deep, intensive courses, and then you have to meet the Beit Din after a number of years to prove your sincerity and your desire to join. We don't seek out converts and missionize. We don't do that. But what we so while we don't do that sort of outreach, we do inreach. Right, we do have a desire. We understand that Kol Yisrael, Aravim, Zelazah, Al Jewish, all of the nations of Israel are intertwined with each other. Our fate is one. We're like people in a raft in the middle of the sea, and one guy's banging a hole right under his chair, and someone's like, "What are you doing? Why are you doing? Hey, this is my seat. I can do that." That's the nation of Israel. So there are certain Jews that set up a little budka, like a little thing on the street, and they try to entice and invite young Jews, old Jews, anyone, myself included. There were times that I didn't put on my tefillin, my phylacteries, until 4 p.m. I just didn't get to do it that day. And I'm walking down the street and they say, "Hey, could you do that?" I haven't done it yet. Absolutely. They don't discriminate.
They're just spreading more mitzvahs in the world.
Spreading mitzvot, spreading light.
And so now someone that sets up a little booth on the side of the road to encourage someone to read the Bible or to put on tefillin or to have Shabbat candles or to maybe give charity. Now that person is subject to 6 months in prison. Now, so we're making a government where that's out of all the things that need to be done in Israel now, all of the laws that could be passed. There were riots inside Israel. There was a war with the Hamas just like less than a month ago. And the top of this party's priority is to put people who are encouraging Jewish spiritual behavior in prison. So it's like, where is the direction of this country going? And I'm now going to, I mean, that's just two examples.
Can I just give one more?
Sure.
Another one is, I don't know if you saw on our calendar, but next week, the Supreme Court is having another hearing about what's happening at the farm out here. You know, we just came out to this mountain. We have drone footage to prove that there was literally nothing when we came out here. There was just rocks and tumbleweeds, nothing. And a few Jews came out and we started making the hills of Judea beautiful. Three vineyards, 4,000 plus fruit trees, ecological pool. It's just beautiful. And there's so much legal jargon, legal issues that we have to be jumping through all the time, spending a tremendous amount of money dealing with lawyers and this whole thing. Meanwhile, in the South, in Israel, the Bedouins literally are just spreading throughout all of the Negev desert, setting up encampments all over the place, terrorizing the Jews there, stealing and making life miserable for people there. They have zero legality. And Naftali Bennett, who's supposed to be a right-wing leader, supposedly, has given in to the demands of Ra'am, this Arab party upon which his coalition stands, and said they're all legal now.
To legalize all of the Bedouin illegal buildings, but none of the Jewish buildings that are still contested. And at the same time, that same Ra'am party in the coalition agreements, the government is to give the head of the party a half a billion shekels, 500 million shekels, to use at his own discretion. Is that
discretion?
The word? Discretion. That's like, just here's your shochad.
Disclaimer. Jeremy made Aliyah when he was 12 years old. Your English is excellent
Thank
for a 12-year-old moving to Israel.
So that's, I mean, I don't know what else to call that more than a bribe. You're giving someone a half a million check that has no strings attached. You can just do with it what you want. Here you go. Here's 500 million shekels of our taxpayers' money to the head of the Arab party that he can use and give to whoever he wants and his own choice. It's just corruption on top of corruption on top of corruption. And so, so I don't want to depress all of our listeners here.
The truth is, when you say that, I'm not depressed from this. You went through a rough time.
I had one day that was very hard on
you. You had a really tough day, and I sat down and I said certain things to you like, these are politicians, what do you expect? This is Hashem doing something, and things are already broken, and he's just amplifying what's broken already, and this is setting the groundwork for Mashiach, and you're like, yeah, I guess. And then you went and you spoke to Aaron Baim, in Ibea Nachal, and he said, I think pretty much the same thing to you, and it uplifted you.
Yeah.
What did he say to you that made you feel better?
Hashem runs the world. What are you so concerned about? And it's just true. Like whenever I feel anxiety or upset or anger. It means that I'm trying to hold on to something that isn't just reality. I have to accept reality as it is and know that reality unfolds for the good and have faith that Hashem runs the world. I was saying, no, I don't want reality to be this. I don't want to see this betrayal. I don't want to see this. I can't handle this. I don't want this. And that was creating just terrible feelings inside me. And then he said, you just have to let go and let God. And I'm like, you know what? I'm going to let go and let God.
Okay, so you're letting go. You've been in a better place since then, I think.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's really, you know, it's funny because here I am. I constantly, I mean, the last, I think, three or four fellowships were dealing with different types of tragedies. There was the tragedy in Meron. Then there was a war in Gaza. And I'm trying to say, like, well, how should we deal and cope with tragic times? And I think that one of the first lessons is things that are out of our control. If they're out of our control, we just have to let them go, and we can really only control our response to those scenarios. And here I am when this thing is out of my control. It knocked me out for about a day. And so, but I think that's also when something like really hard hits, maybe it's okay to just have like a day of crying, a day of mourning, and then eventually you got to pick yourself up and move on. And so I had a day where I just was practically dysfunctional. I just wasn't functioning.
Yeah, it really shocked
like,
me.
I was just like dizzy. I couldn't believe.
I haven't seen that for a long time.
Well, you know, I went into politics alongside you together with Naftali Bennett when he first entered into politics. And I never fully trusted him. I never fully endorsed him. But I saw a spark in his eye that when he first went in there, it really seemed like he really wanted to do good. It really seemed like he wanted to come and give of his time and give of his money and give of his will to try to help Israel and the Jewish people. And so just and to see how that has been either just corrupted by the system or corrupted by who knows what forces outside of him, it was just really hard for me to see.
So do you feel like he's lying? And he knows that he's lying and that he knows that he's betraying and this is all just his own motive, ambition? Or has he actually convinced himself?
No, at this point, he knows that he's lying. There's no question.
No, he knows that he's lying, but has he convinced himself that this is actually for the good of Israel and not for his own ambition?
No, I think that what he's said is, I'm a politician and politicians lie. And it's okay. It's a part of the game. There's some promises that I can keep, and there's some promises that I can't keep. And these are promises that I can't.
What do you say? Haftacha libatit?
Libatit, like the essential promise. I didn't.
His heart's yeah. Yeah. He made a promise that he would never sit with Yair Lapid and the coalition. He's like, it's just against my ideology. I would never do it. And then he says, well, you know, in my heart, I was actually intending that what I was saying is that I want to save Israel from chaos.
And sit with Yair Lapid. Meaning it's the exact opposite. Meaning it's just a bold-faced lie. And then just a few days ago, his international advisor, I think his name is George Birnbaum, went onto Bloomberg TV and was praising Naftali Bennett to the American people, saying he is like Ariel Sharon. His heart has now turned. He was on the right, but now he wants to make peace with the Palestinians. He's ready for concessions if need to be made. And people are like, what? I mean, that has happened in the past where people from the right have turned to the left because, you know, the elite in Israel, the left in Israel, the secular in Israel.
The media is also in Israel. It's like it is in America.
They're offering Naftali Bennett and they offered Ariel Sharon, you know, hey, come and be with us. We'll treat you well. You'll be our hero.
The treatment also that Bennett is getting is really shocking. The parallels between American leftist media and in Israel.
It's almost the same.
It's almost the same thing.
And so,
meaning, go ahead.
Well, I just want to finish this one story.
Yeah,
so
please.
George Birnbaum came out on American television and said that Naftali Bennett has officially now turned to the left. And so then Naftali Bennett came out with a statement saying, nope, we are no longer working with him. He's no longer our advisor. And then in the same day, George Birnbaum was taken of him in the Knesset sitting with Ayelet Shaked, Naftali Bennett's second in command, sitting in the Knesset, advising her with her. So it's just like one lie on top of another lie on top of another lie. Like what is truth anymore? It's all just lies. It's like,
and it seems like anyone that has like faith in Hashem and faith in the nation of Israel and wants to be strong and proud and move forward from a real place of faith, of bitachon, of emunah and Hashem, anything you say against this government, immediately they're saying hasata. It's incitement. It's incitement. Everything is incitement. Forget the fact that for years, the left were saying, kill Bibi, murder his family, nothing. nothing was said, but the head of the Shabak and everyone, oh, this is incitement and we're in danger of a January 6th thing happening. What happened in America could happen here in Israel. Like the absorption of the dysfunction that happens in the West and the way it influences Israel is just so powerful. It's such a powerful influence. I also think that Israel and the police, their response to these Arab riots in Lod and Akko was very much because of the impotence of American police to the Black Lives Matter movement. There is this intersectional conflation that American leftists have, and Israel is actually adopting it and giving into it. And it's like you can see the war for our internal identity happening. And there's like, it's almost like there's the Jews and there's the Israelis, you know, people that are just, they identify with Israel being another European country from the West. And there's people like, no, we are Jews with our own identity and our own values and our own mission. And people like that are getting their WhatsApp accounts canceled. I don't know how the world isn't up in arms, how people aren't, you know, it's one thing Facebook and then Twitter and then Instagram canceling people, but your own internal WhatsApp communications, like Ben Gvir and his wife and 30 people on the right in Israel have literally had their accounts canceled with all of their information and all of their communications, and all of their pictures, boom, disappeared. And nobody is saying anything about this. It's like there's no digital
boycott.
Well, it is a digital boycott, but there's no digital refuge.
You know, there should be a digital boycott of these social media platforms, but we're all so addicted to WhatsApp and Facebook and Twitter and all of these things that it's almost like we can't. I mean, if I had $1 billion, I would invest in creating a decentralized social media platform that people can use in Israel that doesn't have the ability to be shut down and controlled by, you know, the powers at be.
Well, I think there's one called Signal that does that, also Telegram, but it's just, I think the people are just too, like the way they build Signal supposedly is that they themselves don't have access to do what WhatsApp we see is doing already. Mm-hmm. So either way, what you said is true. There's just an addiction to these platforms. People tried to switch over to Signal, but it's hard. It's almost like the miracle of the Hebrew language being born in the state of Israel. How do you get an entire nation of people, particularly Jews, that have two Jews, three opinions, to all switch over and revive a dead language? Only with divine assistance and direction could such a miracle have happened, because we see we're not even able to switch over to another digital platform.
Right. Well, let me tell you, here's the positive. The positive is that all of the ingathering of the exiles and all of the revival of Israel in Hebrew and the Jewish people in the land of Israel, all of it is like a sifting process. So we're sifting out those that feel the calling to come back to the land of Israel. And then people that are in the land of Israel, there's a sifting process because many of them leave Israel. I think now since 1948 until now, there have been 1 million Jews that have made Yeridah from Israel. So that's another sifting process that's happening. And now within Israel, we had leaders that Naftali Bennett was a potential prime minister candidate for the right-wing camp and the religious kind of conservative camp, the camp of the believers. He was a real contender after Netanyahu, and so were a lot of the people in his party. And then there's Gideon Sar, and what's happened is like just a big sifting has happened now. Like a lot of the yuck of Israel has been exposed, and that's really important because, listen, there'll be elections in another, I don't know, I can't imagine this government lasting very long. How long will these total polar opposites be able to sit together? How long will we sell out the country?
The question is whether they're really total polar opposites. They may actually last. This government may last. Why? Because if it doesn't last, Bennett realizes that it's over for him.
It's not over for him.
No?
No, I think that he's just going to pivot to the left. He's like, all right, bye, right-wing camp.
So that's why it may last, because he's pivoting now.
Maybe.
Meaning, like, he says to the right wing, you got me here, you gave me my 7 mandates, now I'm pivoting out, and I realize that, because if this thing falls apart before it happens, Bennett's done.
Right. It could be. I mean, the whole, it must be from God. This entire, you know, process is on one seat. It's 61. If just one person in that government, whether it be Zev Elkin, who was a Likud guy, or whether it be Gideon Sar, or someone within the religious Zionist party of Bennett's party.
And so why aren't they?
I don't know what to say, but what I do know is that if I would have been there 10 years ago, I probably also would have betrayed my values. I don't think that they're any different than me. I don't think that we're such amazing people and they're such dreck. Those people went in there with really good intentions and with good hearts and with good minds and with good values, and somehow they have been corrupted. And I don't think that any of us are vaccinated for that type of pressure.
I really don't think I would have. I don't think I would have. I don't think I would have betrayed my values, because number one, I never thought that I would actually be in the Knesset or that I would be good in the Knesset. I was excited about certain elements of being able to share the message, but who knows? Like, who knows? We see what's happened with certain Knesset members and what they did to get in, and now there's huge scandals that are destroying their lives and their families. Just who knows? I mean, when we went into that Knesset campaign with Naftali Bennett, we both said, this is just to use as a platform to get the ideas out. We're not actually trying to get in. But I think we got actually so close that maybe there was some confusion there.
Well, I think that you and I went in with definitely different intentions. I wanted to get in. I like to win. I wanted to get in. I wanted to make a difference. And I could see that my desire to want to make a difference from the inside is
its own drug.
Yeah, well, it's almost like a good politician is a master of compromise, because he has to work with all of these different people. So inherently, how much are you ready to compromise? You compromise here, you compromise there, but then eventually you just become a compromised person. You just become a coom. And so that, I don't know if anyone is, maybe there's some people that would really be able to like hold their ground, but it would have to be someone like Itamar Ben-Gvir that's on the far right, that's not playing politics, that he's there with his mission. But those type of politicians aren't necessarily the most effective because they don't know how to work with other people. It's a really complicated scenario, but the kind of the systematic problem of the modern state of Israel is being exposed for what it is. Maybe it's time for a different type of system. Maybe instead of the state of Israel, it's time for the kingdom of Israel. Maybe instead of like this sort of ridiculous system, there needs to be a new system. Something is being exposed now. A sifting process is happening. We've definitely now exposed the yucky ones, at least some of them, for who they are. And hopefully the next time around, hopefully they won't be there.
Never have I felt or seen such a vacuum, such a void in the Israeli political leadership scene, where I think people from all the sides, if there was a real, true leader, a leader with a simple heart just to speak the truth, that was willing to speak the truth and fall, like what, Ner Orbach, why isn't he just saying, I'm out? I'm out. What is it worth looking in your grandchildren in the eyes and saying, oh, I still am a Knesset member, and I'm in? It's such an opportunity to leave on a high note. And I think that a real leader arising in Israel with the heart of simplicity and truth. And why do I say truth? I mean, I mentioned this in the fellowship, but it's worth just revisiting again. Then in the last week's Torah portion, the spies came back. They misunderstood their fundamental mission. They actually were supposed to go in there, la tour of the land, to be tourists, to see the beauty and the resources, and to come back with a message of encouragement and positivity. But instead, they were spies, and they came back with a strategic tactical assessment of the situation. And they said, there's Canaanites, and there's Perizzites, and there's the Amalekites, and the cities are well fortified. We can't do it. And the response to that from Kalev was, Alo na'ale, v'yarashnu ota ki yacholnu chala. We can do, we have to go up and inherit the land because we can. He didn't even address all of those issues. And there's a certain beauty and simplicity to that response that I think people are thirsty for. And then after, of course, when the truth was revealed and Hashem's anger flared and the entire nation was to die in the desert and only their children would inherit it, the word that's used for die in the desert is yitamu bamidbar, that they would just cease in the desert. But Rav Biederman brings a beautiful idea. He says, Yitamu from the word tam, that the nation will again become tam, that they'll have simple hearts, simple, not the overwhelming complexities of the political strategic situations and the coalition building. And, you know, sometimes we're so brilliant that we're stupid. You know, that we just confuse ourselves and convince ourselves. And there's just a certain beauty towards simplicity. And that's what I think the nation is really yearning for right now, is just, and that's why I think if we went to elections, the far right would be getting even more mandates than ever before.
Well, you know, today I spent the day in the hardware store buying building supplies for our newest outpost that we're helping establish. And so that's just my fun, is to be like, wow, Naftali Bennett, wow, he's going to be our Rosh Memshala, just to see, you know, like, what are people going to say? And the just absolute hatred, the anger and the feelings of betrayal of just, you know, the simple workers in the hardware store was so overwhelming.
Yeah.
But then all of them said, oh, next election, I'm voting Ben-Gvir. He would never lie.
Yeah.
So I feel like
that's what my water filter guy just said.
Right. So it's interesting.
He said, Ben-Gvir, I'm so happy. Yeah. And the guy that my phone screen broke, maybe I should talk about that. That was like a whole God message to me. But the guy was like, I'm just so filled with regret that late at night, we got a babysitter so my wife and I could go out and vote. And we voted Bennett. And ugh.
Oy. Thank God I didn't vote for him. That would still
Who did
be,
you vote for?
I voted for Bezalel and for Bennett.
Oh, you did? Okay. Yeah, me too.
Oy. Anyway, so here's what I try to come away from all of this, because all of this stuff is radically out of our hands. I mean, for the first time in a very long time, I actually felt a desire to like step into the rink of politics. I'm like, okay, I'm just never doing that.
Our friendship would be over, you know that.
But I'm just saying that it was, because for so long, I had no, that was just the farthest thing from it. I was like, gosh, someone has got to try to go in there. But anyway, but...
But let me tell you what you're doing... What we're doing, but what you did today with Elon and Ruju Manaka, that was great. You know, to me, it's like I think of certain leaders in the past, and if they were alive today, I would just say, I'm behind you. I'll do everything. I'll take you to the hardware store, buy you whatever you need. That's what you tell a little bit about that. What happened? Should I give the little background that happened with me and Ruju Manaka?
Whatever you want.
Okay, so bottom line is, and you'll correct this a little bit, but we have been for a while now the furthest outpost on the southeastern tip of Judea, right? We are on the tip. We've like defined the tip of Judea, which is really exciting. Now, for a while now, we've taken these road trips deep into the Judean, and by deep, it's like a 20-minute drive, but on Israel terms, that's deep. And you just go through all of this empty desert, and then you hit this cavalry, Jordanian, you said it was British. I think it's pretty much sure it's Jordanian cavalry base from like the 40s. And a lot of Jews have been trying to establish this as an outpost. It is the Judean desert. We are Jews. We need to strengthen Judea so Jews are able to actually go from Judea to the Dead Sea, and we can reconnect to this huge part of our very essence, which is the Judean desert. And these two guys got the permission to do it, and they set it up, right? This outpost in it's called Rujum Anaka. What does Ruju Manaka mean?
Ruju means a big pile of stones, and Anaka's means giant. So it's a giant pile of stones.
Giant pile of stones, right?
Because it's just the desert, and there's this big thing on top of the mountain. Why not?
So Shabbat came. And I think it was last Thursday that it happened. And then a Shabbat came and Friday night was a beautiful thing.
It was their first Shabbat.
Shabbat there. And Shabbat at about 1 p.m., I'm sitting down and Shana just brings out this cholent. And I'm trying to be like on a keto diet and lose some weight and have my body be more of a vessel for God's light in the world. I'm all excited to dive in. And then Yossi pulls up in his Jeep, you know, our partner Yossi. Doesn't happen on Shabbat. Nobody pulls up in a Jeep to your house on Shabbat. And his son runs in and says, I need my Abba's Neshek. You know, I need his weapon because I had it in my safe at the time for whatever reason. And I said, what's going on? He says, you need to jump in the car too. So I jumped in the car and he says that he just got this emergency call from these two guys that are on this mountaintop in the middle of nowhere and deep in the Judean desert. And they've just been swarmed by 50 to 70 Arabs, what the world calls Palestinians, but there's Muslim Arabs, many of them jihadists, just swarming, and they're in serious security danger. And we are closer to them than the army or the police. So I jumped in Yossi's Jeep, and he floored it there. I could have sworn we were going to flip over. He was driving as fast as humanly possible on Shabbat, because this is to save a life, right? And we pull up, and we go, like, zoom right up to the building, and I jump out, and it was a great time for me to try my... Conversational Arabic. Yeah. And also to do my thing. Right. So I jumped out and there's all this like negative tension and emotions. And I jumped out and I said, Kif halkum, mabsoot, alhamdulillah. Like, how are you all doing? Good to see you. Islamu idek. God bless your hands. And I'm just like blessing them. Meanwhile, they were like shaking the fence and screaming and anger and hatred. And I just kept on blessing them. And I could just tell that my theory was true. It was just taking the wind out of their sails. You know, it's hard to keep on hating on a guy that is irrationally and unreasonably blessing you and your family in the name of God, right? And then and we were just like really buying time. There's all these video cameras there and cameras and video cameras. And then I could tell this was a staged stunt, which made me feel like a little bit more calm that this wasn't going to be an actual jihadist lynching, which it very well could have been. And then the police and the army showed up and, you know, and I got to sit down with them and talk with Elon. And this guy is just so sweet and loving and peaceful. He's like, if they came and they wanted to talk, I would invite them in and offer them tea. And but they just came and they're shaking and they're threatening. And so that's what happened. That's what's happening in Rujhunanaka right now. And so tell what you did today.
So today, I mean, he's all alone. And so I met him for the first time 6 months ago. And, you know, as soon as we came out here, my two partners, Yossi and Roni, so they already had their eye. Well, someone's got to settle Rujhunanaka. That's just such a strategic place that there should be like one Jewish center in the desert that could be a place where people could stop. They could have like a home away from home in the desert. But up until now, there were just too many bureaucratic loops that people would have to jump through and no one was able to do it. And all of a sudden, this guy, Elon, pulled it off. And 6 months ago, I get a knock on my door and I open the door. And that just happens here on the farm because people sometimes just knock on my door. And he's like, hi, my name's Elon. Are you Jeremy? And I said, yes. He's like, well, can I talk to you? And I said, absolutely. He's like, listen, I'm planning on going up to the Rujum. And I said, wow, you and another 50 people, that's a lot of people dream of going up there. And he's like, no, I'm really going to do it. And he was an elite commando a unit in the army. He stayed in the army for most of his life. He has a lot of military connections and he's a very competent person. And he's like, listen, you guys are known as the most successful outpost in Israel. No one has built what you guys have built here at Chavat Arugot. No one has ever seen anything like this. And I really just wanted your advice of how you did it. And I said, I don't really know what to say. We've just been blessed. It's just like by the grace of God, we've been able to do what we've done. But I want you to know that if you're going to leave your wife and you're going to move out that deep into the desert.
Not leave his wife. He's not leaving.
He left his wife in the nice village in the community. And I mean, they're still married.
That's what I mean. Still lovingly married and she supports him.
Supports him. He loves him. But right now he's living there. And until there's a toilet and warm water, she's not coming. And so right now there's no electricity. There's no water line. And it's like roughing it. It is like literally, it is as pioneering as you can imagine. And she says, as soon as it's ready for me, she's going to be there. But in the meantime, he had to leave his wife and go. And it's just like, it's a serious sacrifice. It's dangerous. It's scary. It is a mesirut nefesh of the highest order. And I said, listen to me. If you're going to do this, Ari and I have your back. We will help you all the way. And so he got there just like less than 2 weeks ago. And Baruch Hashem, someone from our fellowship.
You should know when I got there on that emergency moment when all the tensions were up, I had yet to meet him. I knew about him, but I had yet to meet him. You were really taking the point on this. And he's like, okay, what's your name? I said, Ari. He's like, Ari from Ari and Jeremy?
Ari from Ari and Jeremy. And so anyway, our fellowship gave us, a member from our fellowship gave us a serious contribution to help this project and move forward. So we went to the hardware store today and it was like, we were in one of those, I don't know, kid TV shows where they go through this toy store and they take this toy and they take this toy and they're running through the aisles.
I think it was
called
Supermarket Sweep. Yeah, where you can just, like, just pack your...
run through the store, they get to pick whatever they want. And so we had literally an entire truck of building supplies, of tools, and we're now going to refurbish, rebuild that old cavalry station into something really beautiful in the middle of the desert for people around the world to be able to actually come and have a place that they can go and visit in the desert and connect to the Judean desert. And it's beautiful. And so that's what I did this morning before this podcast.
And so to me, that's a therapeutic way to channel angst about what's happening in the government. Something, what can
I do?
Yeah,
that's exactly what I feel. The two things have come to me over all of this sort of lack of control that we have over the, I mean, because who knows what direction this government's going to go? We're just sort of like a little molecule inside a giant wave, and the wave is going to go wherever the wave is going, and we're a molecule within that wave, and we just have no control over where the wave is taking us. But what can I do within this is like, all right, well, I can just keep on keeping on, keep on settling the land, keep on working harder, keep on trying to become better. And the more I think about that, so of course that means developing our farm and trying to help new farms and continue to like just La reshet et haaretz, to inherit the land, to develop the land, and to control. Like, that's the mission of this generation. Meaning, if one generation it was to fight the Nazis, and there was another Jewish generation they were to establish the state of Israel, there was another generation that was to open the gates and then gather the exiles from the Arab countries and from Russia and from Ethiopia, and now our generation it is to inherit the land. Four generations to inherit it, and then to inherit it to our children, to finally seize the land, reclaim the land. And so what I can do is I can try to help rebuild a little bit more in Judea. But then I think about on a deeper level, there's something else that's going on, that all of this process keeps on pulling me more and more inside. It keeps on taking me more and more to like, well, what about me? And I just keep on coming to this thought over and over again. And, you know, I have my oldest son, Lavi, he's so focused right now on getting into this elite, you know, engineering cyber program in the IDF. He wants to be like one of the top intelligence units in the IDF. And he's working so hard in really maximizing his talents, because he's a very smart boy, in order to give his best and achieve as much as he can. And I'm always trying to kind of counterbalance that. And last Shabbat, I was saying, you know, it's not about what you do or what you get or even what you achieve, but who you become, that's eternal. Meaning eventually one day we're going to reach our creator, and we can't really bring the companies that we've built. We don't really take the things that we've done here in this world. It's not really what you've bought or what you've achieved. It's who you are is what goes with you. You are who you are, and that can never be taken away. That's eternal. And for all of us to sort of refocus inside to become better and to become stronger is, I think, the calling right now, because we can't control where the wave of the government is going to take us. But all of us, when the flood comes, if we build ourselves up strong, we'll be able to make it through the flood. And so that would be my calling right now, is to kind of go on in the inside and try to become the best that we can be.
That is beautiful, Jeremy. I'm glad we did this. I'm glad we did this podcast. You know, the fellowship is taking a little bit of a toll. We really pour our heart and souls into this fellowship, and it is such an integral part of, I feel like my soul is tied into the fellowship and into this farm, and they're all really tied into each other. And we just put so much into that that it's hard then to sit down and do a podcast and not necessarily repeat what we came up with on the fellowship. But we said, you know, we have to do this also. It's connecting on a different plane, on a different dimension with each other. And also to invite all of our listeners out there, if you're not a part of the fellowship yet, please consider joining it, because it is such a profound, impactful way to support us and to stand with us and to stay connected to this incredible light of inspiration and illumination that's coming every week. I'm like, how did we just do that again? It just feels like it's from Hashem that such bracha is coming, and we're coming out with such gems of gold. Me and you and Tehillah, forget about it. She's like really, really rocking it. So for those that are not yet a part of this fellowship, reach out. Reach out to me at ari@thelandofisrael.com, jeremy@thelandofisrael.com. You could go to thelandofisrael.com/fellowship and really consider joining and standing with us on every level. I believe it'll be a tremendous, tremendous bracha to us and to you and to the whole world. Anyways, Jeremy, it's great to have you here, brother. I look forward to doing this again. And to all our listeners out there, shalom, shalom. Stay strong. Stay strong.
My name is Jeremy Gimpel, and I live here in the mountains of Judea. And in these unprecedented times, I wanted to offer you a gift from the Land of Israel. We've been here at the cutting edge of the Jewish return to the Land of Israel. We've come to the place where King David first assembled his men and where he wrote most of the Book of Psalms. We are quite literally transforming this desert mountain area into a Garden of Eden-like oasis. Watching prophecy manifest into reality, we felt called to reach out to the nations, to teach them lessons from the Bible in the original Hebrew, unlocking insights and understandings that you can only get if you read the text in its original language and from a Judean perspective. The prophet Zechariah spoke of a time that 10 men from all the nations will grab hold of the corner of a garment of a Judean man and say, "Take us with you, for we have heard that God is with you." Perhaps this is the time that the righteous among the nations will now make a sharp U-turn and reconnect to Israel, reconnect to Judea, reconnect to the Hebrew roots of the spiritual realities of this world.
This is an invitation to join us at our next live gathering with hundreds of families from over 30 countries around the world. And if you register now, we'll give you a free gift from Israel, the first 5 sessions that unlock the secrets of the Hebrew Bible and how to live as a believer in these times. I hope to see you at the Land of Israel Fellowship. Shalom.